magic. Well, world music vibe, Dan.
Indeed.
Dan Etherly is our garden guru on today's gardening programme here on BBC Radio Devon. Talking about his life as an author, a zoologist,
yes.
television producer, working
almost
with the great names. Sir David Attenborough, of course. And it's just a fascinating insight to research into non-natives, because it is one of those topics that the language around it isn't very good. It can be a bit sort of red top. I mean, this idea of being invaded and our way of life changing because of immigration is, you know, it touches a nerve with a lot of people, and in gardens as well as everyday life.
I mean, I suppose what I would sort of stress is something that I was talking about off mic just now, is the rule of tens. So very roughly around 10% of all introduced plants and animals managed to establish in Britain, and of those, maybe only another 10% ever cause any problems at all. So really, it's only maybe like 1% of any introduced species that causes any problem at all. So in a way, that the thing is ever so slightly exaggerated in the media sometimes.
I can see. One of the things for you, though, as an author writing a book, Invasive Aliens, is that it's a changing picture. There must be new things coming in all the time, and plants must be one of the main vectors for that.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely seems to be an general increase, probably for two main reasons. Firstly, the amount of globalised trade is increasing. So even if we're not deliberately bringing things in from other countries, there's a lot more stuff coming accidentally, just in the mud of our walking boots or in our fishing nets, just all the bits of greenery. If you went fishing abroad, there's things kind of hitchhiking on the side of, you know, shipping containers. So there's a lot of things coming for that reason. And then at the same time, obviously, climate change. So there's the kind of environment in Britain is definitely changing, and there will be even more extreme changes.
You say it's definitely changing. I mean, I do. I do, definitely.
Are you allowed to say that on the BBC?
I think it's taking its toll. I'm allowed to have a view, and I think it is. I've stood outside on many days in October, and when I was younger, they were colder.
It's a scientific fact, basically, that the climate... I mean, not that climate change is happening, whether or not specific phenomena that we see at the moment, like a lot of rain, yes, that's climate change. It's not as simple as that. But on average, we reckon that the winters are getting wetter and warmer, so that the environment's changing. And so obviously natural species are going to, some of them are going to do better, some of them are going to do worse.
For plants, as a zoologist, you'd know that to be quite a tough thing, because I guess animals can move north or south much faster.
Well, I don't know. I mean, obviously, plants are pretty good at dispersing themselves. I mean, their pollen and their seeds go all over the place. I mean, there's one invasive species I'm sure your listeners are all familiar with, the Japanese knotweed.
Oh, don't talk about it.
I'm going to say it again. The Japanese knotweed that just a tiny bit of root fragment, maybe, I don't know, an inch long or something, that's enough to start a new Japanese knotweed plant, because it spreads vegetatively, and I just said that correctly on air, vegetatively. So basically, even a tiny fragment can do it. So I think plants have probably got just as much chance as animals to get to Britain in the future.
But I meant for our indigenous plants, or plants that we think of as indigenous, if the weather warms, if you're a shrew, you can scuttle a few yards north every day. If you're an oak tree, once you've dropped your seeds underneath your canopy and your jays have taken, I suppose jays have taken, but you know, is it not going to move as quickly? That's my...
Well, I'm not really an expert on how the plants will respond, but I mean, suffice to say, some plants are going to do worse, some plants are going to do better. I mean, I guess if it's warmer and wetter, most plants are going to benefit in a you know, funny sort of way. So. So, and yes, you're right, things like butterflies we're seeing are moving north. There's some really good research, I think it's at York University, where they've mapped the patterns of how things have moved north.
Oh, really?
It's happening in the seas as well. We're getting a lot of marine species now around our waters that we weren't getting. Maybe
a lot more jellyfish than when I was a kid.
Way more jellyfish.
Yeah.
There's actually quite a good book about jellyfish, which I've now forgotten the title of, which does discuss whether we're going into a descent into slime, because there's more jellyfish, there's more glutinous sort of horrible yucky things in the sea that in a way, kind of displacing sort of fish.
Yes, they're going north.
But again, maybe that's climate change. Maybe that's just overfishing. Who knows?
In our time here in the UK, though, we've had there are animals that we now regard as pests that we were eating. And of course, they presented a challenge to your book because new research coming out all the time. Tell us about the
Indeed.
Rabbit, Dan.
Yes, the rabbit. Yes, the rabbit almost got me unstuck. I mean, I'm sure my book's absolutely riddled with mistakes and anachronisms,
no.
But you know, what the hey. So with rabbits, I very carefully did my research. I read lots of books and research papers and talked to experts. And so I was writing there in black and white that the rabbits were probably introduced in the sort of the 12th century, the 1100s. In fact, the very first record, written record of rabbit keeping, because they were introduced for their fur and for their meat, was on Drake's Island.
Oh, really?
Just off Plymouth. So a very Devon sort of, that's a big thumbs up for Devon there.
Yeah.
So the first rabbits were probably kept there, and they were kept on islands. Basically, a lot. I don't know if Drake's Island's got sand dunes, but they were often kept in sand dunes because they were so pathetic they couldn't really dig their own burrows. So you have to put them in a sat on an island with nice, easy to dig in sort of sand. And then later on, they were kind of brought onto the mainland. And again, we rabbit farmers, rabbit keepers used to. You know, they were quite a sort of delicate species where they had to have their own burrows kind of built for them. They were called pillow mounds because they looked like long kind of pillows. And they even had little moats around them and little walls. And there was a rabbit keeper who was kind of stationed next to them, making sure no nasty weasels or anything, or foxes, or even worse, humans came along to poach the rabbits.
Oh, yeah.
So they were very cosseted and coddled for quite a long time. Anyhow, I'm kind of digressing from your original question. But so, yeah, so I'd written down 1100s. That's when they came, kind of brought by the Normans or around the Norman times, probably from Spain or Portugal, because that's their native lands. And then, blow me, a week before publication, scientists at Exeter University did a big, you know, media blitz. We've proved that the rabbits were actually alive in the Roman times in Britain. So the Romans, 1,000 years before I'd said it.
These newfangled ideas.
Scientists, they're always ruining it, aren't they? I just wanted simple black and white answers, and it's always shades of grey.
Yeah.
So, yes, but luckily I managed to get that fact right, hopefully.
Yeah. And so writing, is that your favourite thing now? How do you spend your time?
Well, researching and writing, I really love researching. So in a way, I mean, you framed me as this garden guru. But
don't go on about it. That's for the intents of this interview, that's what you are.
Yeah, my mum calls me a garden gnome instead. But anyhow,
close.
I love going to a subject about which I'm totally ignorant and just learning, because I'm fascinated about learning new things, got a low boredom threshold. So I kind of love the research aspect, going into old libraries, talking to experts and just finding out stuff, and then kind of concocting an interesting narrative.
Yeah. It's lovely. So, and with you're doing sort of tours at the minute. Are you moving back into television? What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, basically, because writing books isn't a massive money spinner, so kind of my day job is as an environmental consultant.
Right.
So which is a bit of a broad term, but it basically involves anything to do with environmental issues, waste, recycling, energy, renewable energy, and I kind of write, hopefully not too boring, policy documents and case studies to inform policymakers. And also I work with different companies, and I've just finished a couple of years at Exeter University in the business school working on a project all about the circular economy, which is a whole different arena of discussion.
We'll find out more about that after this.
This Sunday's Jeff Barker Rock and Roll Inclusive.